Chad, a very good morning to you. This must have come as an incredible shock to you yesterday or last night.
Howard, yes. Look, it takes a lot to shock me these days, and we understand that organized crime has spilled over into suburbs. But when you're interviewing somebody in the morning and in the early evening, they become the target of a targeted assassination or perhaps a warning, it does bring home the reality just how clued up organized crime is on where their targets are located and also how brazen they've become.
Yeah, I mean, this is 9 p.m. last night. Do you think, you used the word warning, do you think this was a warning rather than a serious attempt at his life?
Yes, I do. I think the shots were fired randomly. They were fired, if I understand correctly from the reports that are coming through, it was fired from the road, through the driveway into that area, and most of the shots landed in a car that was parked, stationary, that was unoccupied at the time in the driveway. So it looks more like a warning than an actual targeted hit.
For those of us that didn't hear the show yesterday, can you give us some context around this murder investigation, around the witness, and everything that is going on here?
So Bradley Goldblatt is a member of the community. He used to be a police officer. And he, when he left the police, he started to manage what is known as a pinging platform. It's a platform that enables users to be able to track cell phones. It's later come out that one of the users of that particular platform, who had initially misrepresented facts that he was a private investigator and had the right to use this platform, it then came out that he was in fact a debt collector that had the right to recover vehicles that may have tracking devices in them, was in actual fact allegedly using this tracking platform to track targets for an organized crime syndicate. And one of those targets, very sadly, was Lieutenant Colonel Shaul Kinnear, who was a part of the anti-gang unit in Cape Town and responsible for the majority of the high-profile investigations in the Cape into organized crime. Bradley is a whistleblower in this. He's the one who realized that the platform was being abused and that certain numbers that were being pinged belonged to officials of the state, and this would in turn make him a state witness at a later stage, which would make sense why they would trying to scare him off.
Is he somebody who is easily afraid? I mean, what do you anticipate is going to happen now?
You know what? I don't know how people react. Everybody reacts differently, but I think anybody having shots fired at their house at night, especially in the midst of a bail application for the prime suspect in the case, which is currently being heard in the Cape, it would come as a shock to anybody, not to take away from the fact that he's a family man. So he's also got his family members to consider. So anybody would take a threat like this very, very seriously. And anybody that is threatened in such a manner obviously immediately thinks first about the safety of their family. So we'd like to obviously see some form of protection in place. We do know that he had protection at a stage as well. I'm not sure that protection is still in place, but it's just critical for us to understand the brazenness of organized crime in South Africa, that they are prepared to go to any lengths to further their nefarious agenda.
We see a tremendous amount of this in South Africa, the intimidation of witnesses, people being taken out, strange accidents happening. Is this higher here in South Africa than it is in other parts of the world?
It would be a difficult way to compare to other countries. One would have to look at countries that have gone through similar stages in their democracies. If one looks at Colombia in the 80s and the 90s, it was a no-go zone. Kidnappings were high, intimidation was high, the assassinations of high-profile investigators, prosecutors was high. And conversely, the same occurred in Sicily as well as in the city of Naples in Italy over a period of time. What people are unaware of in South Africa, I don't know whether they become desensitized or they're numb to it, is that assassinations occur virtually daily. And there needs to be a distinction between an assassination and a murder. A murder occurs, two people have an argument, something goes wrong, the person dies, or there's road rage, somebody gets shot, or a robbery, somebody gets murdered. An assassination is a planned hit, and that assassination has an agenda at play. It's to further some or other agenda that particular group or syndicate has. So in South Africa, we have one of the highest rates of political assassinations in the world. KwaZulu-Natal, certain parts of Mpumalanga, certain parts of Northwest, but primarily KwaZulu-Natal, are known for assassinations of politicians, specifically ward councillors in the more rural areas, and we're going to see a marked increase in that next year with the upcoming local elections. Taxi violence in South Africa, we've seen taxi wars. There's assassinations of taxi drivers, taxi bosses, simply to get control of those routes so that they can spread fear or take out the competition. Then, of course, you have gangland assassinations. That's for turf. That's what we see on the Cape Flats. And now, of course, what we've seen emerge is organized crime assassinations where high-profile investigating officers, high-profile gang leaders from different groupings are now being targeted. So we've got four different types of assassinations that are rife in South Africa. And like I said, I don't know whether we become desensitized to it or numb to it, but if any other country in the world had to experience the number of political assassinations that we experience in KZN primarily and the taxi assassinations that we see countrywide, there would be a massive, massive outcry.
Yeah, and somehow we just get used to it. There's also an element of maybe it's intrigue when it comes to this type of thing. You know, when we hear in Bedford View where we have had a lot of this type of thing happening, it almost sits outside of our reality because we think, well, we're not involved in this. This isn't our world. This is happening amongst these gangs, organized crimes, etc. But it's very naive to think that because obviously this has a major impact on so many aspects of living our daily life, whether it's about drugs and all sorts of other things that are happening within our world.
Well, this is what I've said for years. You know, everybody seems to call Gauteng gangsters paradise and think that we have the highest murder rate. We've known for a long time that in fact it's Cape Town and the outlying areas that have the higher murder rates, but it's contained primarily to the Cape Flats, to the townships, to the legacy of spatial planning under the apartheid regime, where certain people are grouped together. The minute it spills over into suburbia, suddenly it becomes a big thing. Mm. So we had this in the late 90s, early 2000s, where we saw the assassination of Hazel Crane, Shai Avisar, Morty, and we heard that a chap by the name of Leo Saat was involved, and then it became very big news for suburbia. It then quietened down. We then had the bouncer wars, and we heard about different bouncers in different clubs in different northern suburbs being taken out. Then that quietened down. And then, of course, with the arrival of Radovan Kretcher to our shores, we just saw a spike in high-profile assassinations. And like you rightly pointed out, primarily within the Bedford View area. So that starts bringing home something that is so prolific daily in other areas, but because it doesn't impact on us directly, we don't realize the consequences of it until it happens to a neighbor, until it happens down the road, or until it happens to somebody in our community.
Yeah, it's exactly. And then all of a sudden it becomes real and we say, but hold on, why aren't we doing something about this? The other thing we have to do is applaud the people that are prepared to stand up and do something about it, bear witness or testify, knowing full well that they are placing themselves in possible danger.
It's true. Whistleblowers in South Africa get a bad deal. We have a Protected Disclosures Act that was specifically promulgated to protect whistleblowers. We're not seeing whistleblowers being protected sufficiently.
Yeah, we aren't indeed. Chad Thomas, how do you feel about having spoken to him yesterday? And as you said, I know at the beginning of the interview you said you were shocked, but it must be very, very difficult and uncomfortable. And yes, I know that a lot of this is your life. You investigate these things. You obviously see the underbelly of society that most of us don't see or don't want to see or pretend doesn't exist. But this must be very difficult.
It did come as a shock. What came more as a shock is that it was his mom that called me to tell me that this had occurred while he was dealing with the authorities on the scene, and she phoned me as a courtesy just to let me know that everything was all right and to let me know what had happened. And it did come as a complete shock. You know, in my industry, one thinks you can't be shocked anymore. You think you've seen it all. That's not the case. Mm. When it comes to crime, criminals are forever evolving, and they seem to be operating in South Africa with complete and utter disdain for the state and for state law enforcement. And something really needs to be done about this. We need to see some really high profile arrests taking place, and we need to ensure that bail is opposed, and we need to make sure that the rights of citizens in this country are protected. We have state law enforcement. They are now resourced and capacitated. We now need to see them taking on the serious cases.
Absolutely right, Chad Thomas. That's where we leave it. Thank you for making yourself available to speak to us. Thank you for the incredible work that you do. And of course, you could catch Chad's show every Monday at 12 p.m.